So, welcome to another in the Moments of Light series. I'm Tom Evans, and I'm talking to people that have had a light bulb moment and done something about it. And today, I'm especially honoured to be speaking to Kumba Nia. Hi there, Kumba.
Hello, Tom. It's good to speak to you again.
So, listen, when did we meet? You came to one of my workshops, didn't you, about 3 or 4 years ago?
Yes, that would have been, oh my goodness. 2007,
was it?
2008, yeah.
Oh, so it was probably 3 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And since then, so I didn't hear about from you for ages. You went on the workshop, and I didn't hear from you for ages. And then about, I think it was about a year or so later, you said, I'm writing a book now.
Yes, I did.
So what was this book about? Where did you have the light bulb moment for the book?
Well, the book was coming for a while. I think that, you know, that it was more a candle than a light bulb. It was glowing a bit brighter.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden it got to the point where it's like, you know what, you just need to get this out. You need to do this. But the book, the name of the book is A Circle of One, How to Heal Your Relationships and Live Your Truth. And the idea for the book came from the work that I was doing with clients. And anybody who's done any face-to-face work, I'm a personal development and leadership coach, and anybody who's done any work, one-to-work with clients will know that you inevitably get people that present to you who have your stuff going on. As much as we'd like to think, well, actually, no, it'll be terribly professional and we won't go down that road, you're recognizing things that they're saying, and you're saying things to them that you probably should be saying to yourself. And it was the repetition of this pattern and just looking at how that played out that gave me the idea of actually putting this together in a book, because sometimes we're not always willing to see ourselves and we need other people to show us who we are.
Ah, so by inference then, if you were doing this and writing the book about the people around you,
mm-hmm.
but also I was working with you through some of the process of the book, then I was mm-hmm. I was putting you in my circle.
That's right.
This is complicated stuff, isn't it?
It is and it isn't. Part of it is that when you're looking outward and you're looking at other people in your circle, the reflection comes back as to who you are and what you're being and what you're doing at the time. But what's really interesting is that when you speak to the person about your stuff and then they have to look at their circle, they get to see as well. So it seems like a bit like a Venn diagram, actually, in some respects.
Yeah.
You see overlapping circles.
But the book explains all this, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, it's a really simple process. And it all it requires is that you pay attention to who is in your circle at the moment and some of the more challenging traits that they exhibit. And I go for the more challenging simply because it's always easier to identify your criticisms of people rather than your compliments of them. And we're always happy to receive compliments, but we're not always happy to receive criticism. And given that this exercise is to help you see yourself, that's what we go for. So, for example, if I had in my circle someone who was being particularly belligerent and unreasonable and demanding, and I had several of those, and I might call them by different names. It might be somebody that I particularly wasn't fond of, and I thought they were just a pain. They were being awkward or annoying or, just generally a pain. And there was somebody else who I thought was just being slightly irritating and unclear about themselves, but being needy. Demanding and needy are just different sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to be forced to look at what that meant in terms of me. So people will show up and we'll call it different things. But if you go around the circle and you identify the common traits, what you get is an idea of who you're being and what that looks like.
Okay. So let's say you've done that. So you've got this idea that you know who's around you at the moment,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they're reflecting back the things you need to work on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Could you then start with a blank sheet of paper and actually define a circle of who you'd, of the traits you'd like to exhibit and get those people around you, whether it's virtual or real?
You can do. I mean, you know, the circle of one is based on the law of attraction. So by definition, the people around you reflect you. And similarly, if you want to exhibit certain traits that you consider to be positive, then you get those kinds of people around you also. I have to say, if you're not vibrating at that rate, and by that I mean if you are not vibrating in terms of the positive traits, energetic, enthusiastic, determined, life-embracing, if that's not who you really are, those people will quickly move out of your circle, even though you've taken time to bring them deliberately into your space.
Okay, I'm with you. So there's a few gotchas to get over here, isn't there?
Because the energy doesn't lie, and you'll hear me talk about energy and vibration and frequencies, but basically it's a bit like a tuning fork. So yeah. if you hit a tuning fork and you hold another one to it, then the one that you hold up that you haven't hit will automatically entrain to the vibration of the other tuning fork, and that's how we are as people.
Gotcha. So going back to when you wrote the book, mm-hmm. What sort of things, what challenges did you have to embrace to, what should I get around, so that we came from non-author to author?
That was a baptism of fire. I think every doubt, fear, insecurity that I'd ever had surfaced during that process. And not surprisingly, where there were things that I needed to write about in the book, things that I wasn't clear on at the time, I had to clear them before I could continue writing the book. It was a struggle. It really was. And you know, the voices in your head, for anybody who has not yet embarked on their first book but wants to do so, I think there's something about understanding that it's a process. And the process is one of birth for you as well as the book. And you just recognize that it's going to be up and down and up and down. And there'll be moments when you think, I cannot go on. This is bringing up too much, and I'm not sure who's going to see, and I'm not sure how they're going to judge me, and am I good enough, and all of the demons that show themselves. You'll experience all of it, but you come out at the end and you think, damn, I did it. It's the most wonderful experience.
So when that book arrived through the letterbox, the first copy, how did you feel?
I was so excited. It was, I have four children. It was like my fifth one. Mm-hmm. It was like having my fifth child, because trust me, the labor was painful. It really was.
And what's the what doors has it opened for you now?
It's allowed me to speak at a number of venues, to run my workshops more widely, just to share the message. And I'm taking that message in terms of seeing who you really are into the workplace, into business, but expanding it, not just in terms of emotions, but relationships we have with other things in our lives. So relationships with work, relationships with money, for example, mm-hmm. relationships with other things. And that has been, that's been very telling, actually.
Well, in these days, I mean, the financial services industry seems to have a very strange relationship with money on a global scale.
Yes, very much so, very much so.
So could you use this we can use it as the level of an individual, but mm-hmm. could you also use it at the level of a country? You know, so what relationship has Greece had with money in the context of the EU, for example?
Well, you know, what's interesting about Greece is that at the beginning, when they went into the EU, there was something about the figures not adding up properly, that people not being exactly as transparent as they might be in terms of meeting some of the criteria that they were supposed to. And I think there's something about, if you were to do a circle, there's something about dishonesty. There's something about a desperation. There's something about a desire to be accepted, mm-hmm. To be part of something. And all of those things have now backfired. But yes, if you were to look at the country as an individual, that's what you would see.
Got you. So kind of acting in a group karmic way.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, you know, when you identify the traits from your circle in terms of what it is that you're being or how it is that you're being, and you identify them with a view to changing them. For example, with grief, that desperation is what you need to address, and that somewhere along the line, it cannot continue to be, please give us more money, please give us more money, please give us more money. There is something about a self-responsibility and a letting go of the fact that this may be out of our control. So some of the concern about the Eurozone falling to pieces and all of the work around that, it's an acceptance that actually that may be a result of it.
And, well, it's not about it being some sort of cosmic retribution system. They've been naughty boys.
No, not at all. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, people talk about karma, and I never see karma as, you know, this is your comeuppance. That's sometimes how people describe it. I see it as cause and effect. It's like you do this over here, and this happens over there. It isn't about being naughty. It's just showing you what you're putting out. It merely reflects back who and what you're being.
Brilliant. So we've talked about Greece. Let's just talk about an individual and how you'd help. How the work with the circle would help somebody with their relationship with money. We're coming into this time, we're just recording this pre-Christmas, so I guess people are bending their credit cards a little bit and wanting Christmas to be a good Christmas. So how would you go about sort of intelligent circling at these times when you might be spending?
Well, you know, there's something, let me see. We are at a place where people are acting from fear, and from desperation, from a position that is not empowering. And so what often happens is that in a desire to maybe demonstrate to others that things aren't as bad as they are, we bend the credit card, as you termed it earlier. We push the boat out and we do things to extremes that really aren't serving us, and we'll come back and show us the desperation that we've acted in.
Okay, so in the same way that you might be able to take your current circle of people and then make up a virtual or desired circle of people, assuming you then vibrate at the and resonate with that same frequency of those new people, then how would you apply that to something like money, which is this intangible, non-real thing? And is money vibrating?
Well, it's interesting. Money does vibrate. Money is only energy, like love or any of the other things in our society. So it's a form of energy. It's merely a form of exchange. But I think probably the easiest way to describe it would be to give money a personality, if we personified money. So I did an exercise some time ago where I thought to myself, well, if money was a person and I was looking at my relationship with it, and say it was, actually, I didn't start off by thinking about it in terms of an intimate relationship, but that's how it manifests, I guess. But what I found was, at one point, it was a case of money was very intermittent. It was inconsistent. It showed up in great amounts, and then there was feast, and then there was famine. And one of the things that I remember, I wrote a passage just describing it, and I said, you know, the relationship was very much the case that when it was there, I took it for granted. I didn't recognize the value of it, and I used it. That's the word. I used it. And when it wasn't there, I was very needy and longing for it and looking for it to come back into my life. Now, if you look at your relationship with money as a person, and if that were an intimate relationship, that would be a very, very dysfunctional relationship. That would be one that you'd need to see a counsellor for. Okay,
wow.
you'd need to be at Relates for. And it's very telling, because then you say, okay, if this is how I'm being, right, if this is, you know, with the circle, the question is, and where in your life are you being this way? And I looked out and I saw that in terms of some of my efforts to build my business, for example, there was an inconsistency. There was a huge effort sometimes, and then there was a falling down. There was a distraction. And when that happened, what I wanted was for that momentum to gather again, so I'd go all out again, and you'd have that, you know, those peaks and troughs again. Mm-hmm. And similarly, obviously, if money is not around, if it's rare and infrequent, it creates a situation where you end up having to pursue it in spite of your desire to do the things. You know, you do other things that you probably wouldn't want to do or you wouldn't have done. And I've spoken to clients about this. I've conducted a small workshop with this also, whereby people say, yes, they end up doing jobs and doing things that they don't want to do because they feel that they have to, because for them, that's how they get the money. But the energy of that is a very desperate energy. The energy of that is not one of love. It's not one of embracing. It's not what you would want from a nurturing, loving, stable relationship. It's one where you use and you abuse each other. So that, you know, it's very telling. It's very, very telling when we look at it in that respect. And thankfully, when you look at it in terms of relationship, you can change that, because if you can change relationships with people by changing yourself, you can change your relationship with money by changing yourself.
Now, it's interesting, isn't it? Because if I just turn this on its head slightly, mm-hmm. is that I know loads of people that will begrudge spending money on personal development, mm-hmm. workshops, for example, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. or they'll try and find free ones.
Yes.
But they'll spend loads of money on going to a workshop about money.
Right? I know.
Which is just crazy. And a lot of people that make money, just, you know, it's never made sense to me that there can be an industry that just makes money out of money because they weren't mm-hmm. making anything. And obviously that has now panned out on a global scale to be, you know,
yes.
to be a false premise.
Very much so.
Looking at what the work that you do altruistically, could the Circle of One work with money, one, make a fantastic sequel book, and two, be a really good workshop to do on the basis that then one, they get into this, a way of capturing people. Then you say, well, actually, this work came from the personal side.
Yes, indeed. And it is something that I'm looking at for the new year. I'm looking for January and February. I think you're right. People will focus and think they'll go to something on money because, you know, the get-rich-quick mentality, the mm-hmm. idea of, you know, I need a fast fix, that's very dominant in our culture. And the more desperate people feel, the more lack and limitation people feel, the greater that sense. And actually, the way of working with the circle is that actually it's not about the money per se. It's about you. There's nothing wrong with the money. There's nothing wrong with anything out there in terms of the availability of money, the access to prosperity or abundance. Actually, what's up is your relationship with yourself, and that's merely being reflected in your relationship with money.
Wonderful, wonderful work. Well, this is powerful stuff, Kumba. Mm. Mm. You've obviously, and I suppose that it's testament that, you know, when you, because what you did was obviously we met, you then procrastinated for some time, as we do. went through various challenges, wrote this book, and then your world's changed as a result of it. Obviously, with the new work you're going to do around money, it's going to change even mm. more, because it couldn't be more topical to be running these sort of new workshops. And my question for you is, can I throw the gauntlet down and see the sequel book coming out within 6 months?
Yes, but the focus was on business, but I think, yes, I'm happy to do that.
Yes, yes.
That's a yes.
That's a yes. And also, when we write these books, one of the things we've got to do is, before we even write the book, is think about how we're going to market it.
Yeah.
And I can see how, that if we didn't have the title of money for this, but it's mm-hmm. about maybe SME, getting the supply chain working, getting the flow of clients working. You know, because I must admit, it's taken quite a while for me to do this now, but I'm in a really enjoyable position where mm-hmm. I've stopped doing anything that you'd call sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. And all I do is write, and I blog and I tweet and I write stuff. Mm-hmm. I get speaking gigs. I don't get paid very much, sometimes not at all for the speaking mm-hmm. gigs. But what happens is, just the right flow of clients comes along at the right time with the right quality of work, with me adding the right value. And I don't have to put any energy into making that whole thing happen.
And interestingly enough, let me put something to you, that came at a time when you changed how you saw yourself and what you saw as your contribution to the world, and got over that reluctance to be out in the world.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, I think one of the things about all the things that we write is that we can't write about them congruently without having been there and got the T-shirt.
Exactly.
But at the same time, with the circle world, what you're saying is we put around us all the events, the people, and the scenarios which are just perfect for us to evolve and grow.
Yeah. And whether we like it or not, and they are there in glorious technicolor for us to see. And all it is about whether or not we decide to take notice and take action.
That's it, taking notice and taking action. So it's about, and also as you're speaking, as I'm doing now, we're not listening, we're observing. So we have to have those quiet points in our day, I guess, don't we?
Reflective points, yeah.
Good stuff. Well, listen, what a lovely note to wind up on. But listen, how will people get hold of you? How will they find out about these wonderful webinars and your sequel book that's coming out next year?
Well, what I would advise is that people would find details of all of these things through my main website, which is www.kumbhania, that's kumbhania.com. And you will find work around the circle, workshops that I'm running, webinars that will appear in the early part of 2012. So... head on over there and have a look by all means. But I think people will like what they see. They'll like what they find.
Fabulous. And what I'll do is when I podcast this, I'll put the links underneath the podcast. And when I blog it, I'll put the links underneath the blog and the links to Amazon, where they can buy your wonderful, wonderful book. And we're going to have to make a date for 6 months from now, aren't we?
Yes, indeed.
To talk about the sequel.
I look forward to it.
Immensely. Kumbha, have a very, very successful new year. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely fabulous, and keep this wonderful work up, won't you?
And you too, Tom. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.